Things being confusing and described in a way that makes you question your own reality.
I like how you read it and you choose your own adventure. Yeah, you choose to make these things better, make more sense in your head.
Welcome to another episode of the Mind Deck Books podcast. This time we're talking Neuromancer, the original cyberpunk sci-fi classic from William Gibbons.
William Gibson.
Did I pronounce it correctly?
Perfect, yeah.
Gibson.
Mispronounced names.
No, yeah, William Gibbons, that's what I would say.
Gibson.
It's only 260 pages. It's not long. It won a lot of awards. It won the Nebula Award, Hugo Award, Philip K. Dick Award. And it's the first of the trilogy. So it's very successful. Sold millions of copies.
Is it the only book to ever win all three of those awards?
I didn't check.
Okay.
But I think he won more.
I saw
that
somewhere that books, you know, that's like the Triple Crown or whatever for sci-fi.
Oh, yeah,
sci-fi.
It could be.
It was the first or the only one to do that. So,
yeah. And I'd like to welcome John, first time on the podcast, long time listener, first time guest. Awesome to have you on. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to talk to you. I wasn't sure you would make it through the end. Until the end of this book?
I didn't. I stopped and then had to start again. So, yeah, thanks for pushing me. Thanks for encouraging me. Because, yeah, it was definitely worth it in the end. It was definitely a journey. But
there's a lot to love about this book.
Absolutely.
And a lot I didn't have as much fun with. Which I think we will agree on.
Yeah, there's a long passages. And after I was done reading it, I was okay, moving on. Because I don't know what the point of that was. I don't think he's just describing things that... Not moving the plot forward, not moving any story forward.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, every paragraph should end with, like, it was fucking awesome. Like, that's, like, the gist of what you're supposed to
read.
Yeah, yeah, that was what I got out of it.
So we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But first, I wanted to talk a bit about you. What kind of books are you into? Do you have any favorite writer?
In college, I read a lot of Philip K. Dick, a lot of Bukowski.
Okay.
All his Bukowski books kind of run together, so they're like one continuous novel for me.
Hmm.
But I'm more of a movie guy, so if they made a good movie about it, I'll probably read the book and vice versa.
Just talked about the Total Recall episode with Philip K. Dick.
Great episode, yeah. Love to listen. 48,
and you said that you actually visited Philip K. Dick's grave.
Yeah, so... I don't know if he was born in Colorado, but his twin sister was buried in Colorado in a small town. So I was with two of my buddies who are also twins, and we just happened to go out there and kind of make a little patronage out there. And,
So the intent was to visit the grave of his
sister? Yeah. So we drove through, I think it's called Canyon City, and we drove to the small town for that reason. It's also the birthplace of Glenn Miller, if you know who that is.
I don't know.
He's like a 30s jazz artist. I'm sure you recognize the song whenever it's like closing time at the mall.
Oh.
They play his song. It's like time to go home.
Okay. So that's, you mean in Japan?
In Japan,
Okay. So another reason you are on this podcast is that you live in the place where the book takes place.
Well, that was something I was so excited. Chapter one, he's at a gaijin bar in Chiba drinking Karen pints. And I was like, oh my God, this is me. I love this. I was fiction, a little bar, you know, that I go to is in Tsunanoma, but like close enough. And then chapter two, they're gone and don't come back to Chiba. And I was like, oh no. Well, the setting I thought was amazing. You know, it's like Mission Impossible. They're going all across the world and stuff like that.
True.
And then also they're going into like cyberspace and stuff. So like everything is kind of, it's a big setting. It's the whole world, but then it's also a big setting and it's, you know, in a cyberspace.
Yeah.
And everything's kind of connected, you know, it's like he's jacking in, jacking out.
Literally jacking into women.
Not the best phrase. A lot of things in here didn't age well or didn't sound as cool as I think Gibson thought they were. But yeah, just, and then kind of the connection between those world of the cyber world and the real world's all connected, which is, I think, is very accurate to what it is now.
I love the world, I think, and the cyberspace descriptions are really cool.
Yeah.
And the imagination is wonderful.
Absolutely.
I have to draw a comparison with Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson. We talked about on episode 39. I think this is a direct influence. And in that review, I said that cyberspace is less interesting than the real world in Snow Crash. So in this one, it is more interesting in the virtual world. So I was very happy about it.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd imagine cyberspace in like 1984 when the book came out.
Yeah, for
without
the
a
time,
reference point of the internet.
Exactly.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
So this book came out in 1984.
Yeah. Was there's internet back then? You were around.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't around yet. But internet was in its infancy. It was just, you know, the intranet kind of sense of the meaning. Like you had certain companies connecting to each other, but there wasn't any public internet very popularized. And then it started kind of build up. So it was very, very timeless, I guess, or how do you say, forward thinking. For that, William Gibson. I think he's a genius about, like, many things he talks about are very, very true. And you can think of, like, the most recent Cyberpunk series of the game. Do you know the Cyberpunk RPG game?
Oh, yeah. Keanu Reeves in that one, too.
That's, like, a direct inspiration. They said, the developers, that they were inspired by Neuromancer.
Well, sure.
Of course, the Matrix movies are direct. Like, is this the first time maybe they call it the Matrix? Definitely cyberspace is the word that he made up. I was listening to an interview with him, and he said that he was thinking it could be data space, info space, cyberspace, and then the only reason it's cyberspace, it sounds the most cool.
I think a lot of decisions he made in this book were because it sounds the most cool.
Exactly, exactly.
A lot of the kind of techno babble seemed very, I think it's more of the poetry of these technology words not really the practicality of them.
Yes.
Like at one point he's on the train and he's talking about there's some kids with Microsoft behind their ear. Does that mean anything?
Yeah, it did actually. The Microsoft term, I like that one. He means it as an app. Like nowadays we call them apps.
Okay.
Like on the phone. But he calls them Microsoft because they are softwares that are small. They have a singular small purpose. And he talks about like a forest of Microsofts, which is basically the list of apps on your phone. I like that part. I think that made sense.
Okay.
There are much worse things than this.
I'm glad to get over those two, because there's a lot of things like that. It's like you're just throwing words out there. You can't. So that was the Rick Sanchez quote. Jesus, Morty, he can't just add a sci-fi word to a car, to a car word, and hope it means something. Huh, looks like something's wrong with the microverse battery.
And the quantum carburetor.
Quantum carburetor, yeah. So I feel a lot of technobabble here is just a computer word with like a gun word, or a computer word with like a cool sounding word.
I always try to give it a real chance and try to really see if this is like a real meaning and something behind it. And this one, I'm not sure. So ultimately, do you like this or do you hate this? Like the technobabble?
The technobabble, I would say, is definitely on the hate this side of the thing.
I liked some parts of it, but mostly it was very distracting.
Mm.
Like, I have also a quote. I want to give you a very accurate example for the listeners. If you're thinking about reading this book, I would recommend it. But are you thinking about this in the sense of, can you finish it and enjoy it? Or would you be extremely bothered by this? I'd like both you, listeners, and then John, think about what happened in this like paragraph. So the main character's name is Case, and he's on a train. And the paragraph says, Case shuffled into the nearest door and watched the other passengers as he rode. A pair of predatory-looking Christian scientists were edging towards a trio of young office techs who wore idealized holographic vaginas on their wrists, wet pink glittering under their harsh lighting. The techs licked their perfect lips nervously and eyed the Christian scientists from beneath lowered metallic lids. The girls looked like tall, exotic grazing animals swaying gracefully and unconsciously with the movement of the train, their high heels like polished hooves against the gray metal of the car's floor. Before they could stampede, take flight from the missionaries, the train reached Case's station. So,
I think you can cut out everything but the last sentence there. The train reached Case's station. That's about all that happened in that paragraph there.
So there are some people on the train watching porn?
I don't know if they're watching porn or they're just like, I think more of like, you know, people with like tattoos of like pinup girls or naked girls. So I took it as more of just like a fashion thing.
So what does it mean when he says the Christian scientists were edging towards a trio of young office techs?
Like moving slowly or, well, edging now, that has a whole...
Exactly.
Sexual meaning, but I doubt he meant it in that
on
way.
On purpose?
Well, I was thinking more about why are they Christian scientists? Exactly. What does that have to
what
do with anything?
Exactly. What does that mean?
I've never seen someone and go, oh, there's a Christian scientist.
And like, why are they predatory looking? How is a scientist predatory looking?
Well, because he's got a holographic vagina on his wrist.
Are scientists in the future the predators of society? Are scientists the bad guys? Are they the gang members?
I think that'd come again in the book if
slang,
it was.
Is it slang for a gang? What is happening?
Yeah. So there's a lot of that. But again, it's like a mood. You know, it's like once you get used to his kind of style of writing, once you kind of get used to, okay, there's going to be a lot of techno babble. There's going to be a long paragraph where you're not really sure what's going on. You know, and you kind of learn to pick out what's important, what's not important.
Yeah.
Then I think it becomes much more readable. So I want to say that's like an issue about if you want to read the book and like you want to finish it.
Yeah.
It's more of just getting into the book and getting over that hump, which took me 2 tries.
In this case, like the train ride, I think it's amusing. I think this paragraph in particular, it's amusing. But if you want to explain how super intelligences inside the VR matrix combine into like the god himself or something, and you say it in this manner, how do you even know what's happening? Like, if you explain complicated plot points in this way, it's such a struggle to like get through it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're totally right.
So this is what I meant to say. This is actually my biggest problem with this book and something I've become kind of allergic recently to.
Allergic to? Wow, okay.
Check out our Hyperion review, episode 48.
Classic episode.
I hate it in the Hyperion books that there are so many side things that you describe and sound super cool and are super complicated and are so many of them, and then they are never used again, never brought up again, and never tie back together to anything, and they are like useless. For example, at the beginning of the book, the main character buys a super futuristic special gun.
Okay, the gun.
It's called a Cobra.
Was it a gun or is it like a baton? I was thinking.
It's like a baton. Yeah. It's got like a three, like...
I don't think projectiles. I think he hits someone with it.
I'm not even sure.
Okay.
It's got like a pyramid on it of some sort. It's got like three tubes coming out of it. It looks like a tripod.
Okay.
Super cool. He never even uses it much.
Yeah.
And then it's never mentioned again. Where is this weapon?
What's the name of the weapon? I think it's Scorpion or something like that?
I think it's Cobra.
Cobra. It's not really Chekhov's Cobra.
It's a Cobra super weapon, 3 metal tubes, there's a cyber pyramid on top of it.
I think he uses in the next chapter.
Okay, he uses it a little bit.
Yeah.
And never mentioned again.
Well, more beyond that, they set up the whole ninja star thing.
Yes,
and
about so many
how
things.
He's looking at it and his fate's connected with the star.
Yes.
And then it's left as like a little memento at the last chapter. It's like, well, that didn't connect it. So yeah.
So
yeah, lots of Chekhov's guns that never go off.
This is my biggest problem with this. I love the concepts. I think it's super clever. I think William Gibbons is really, really, really good about predicting the future, imagining cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
But then he just throws around all these ideas for nothing. And I'm really annoyed because you already like trying to wrap your mind around all these concepts, and then you just get like side things that don't mean anything and are there to be cool. But I don't care. Just like have it come together. Like have it mean something. Like when it doesn't mean anything, then it's kind of like pfft, like in your brain, it's like what
that's an advantage. I really think about that. But you're right. Yeah, it's not like the most like well structured story or whatever.
So did you feel the pacing was okay? Did you get bored at any point?
Yeah, I definitely got bored in the middle.
Okay.
When they're in Istanbul, and then
it's like a part of the mission. So
yeah, and there's like all the missions seemed like we didn't really know like what was the end goal
exactly
until like the last third when they exactly. said okay here's like the final heist I guess what it was.
I didn't think it was slow. I think it was actually very fast to read, but there were so many parts where I read it and I was like what.
Yeah, that was my whole experience with it. I was like what, and then all the characters that are introduced in the first chapter come back to him as dreams or projections of of Winterfall or so.
So let's take a quick detour. About William Gibbons.
Gibson.
Himself. He was born in 1948. Now he's 77. Canadian or American.
So he's a boomer. I guess because the book's 40 years old now, but it seems very progressive for such an older guy. Because if he came out in 1984, how old was he when he wrote it? 40?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of old for... This seemed like much of a younger guy's of idea, so I was very impressed that, I don't know.
Even now, I was listening to some interviews, he was, I think, around 60, and very recently, 70 plus, and he seems very, very... He's still going strong,
okay.
And he's still writing many books, and he had some comments, I think the interview was maybe 15, 20 years ago, about Google and the future of technology, which I found very interesting. He said that more than using Google as a thing. He feels like we are the product of Google, that it shapes people so much that we are making it happen and having it influence us so much that we are basically selling ourselves to Google by helping it become so much better. And it's almost like a lifelike system where the system learns by it being used.
Better as in like as an AI? Yeah. Better as in selling us stuff? Like what's Google's... what does Google want?
The point is to be, you know, customized to customers, have the customer information, have all the user data. And by getting that, it's becoming better, of course. And it's becoming better to tell you what you need to know. And it's kind of like a relationship. So it's kind of like almost like a living thing that shapes itself into something that not even the company that made it controls. So he had some interesting comments on that I liked. That we are more the product of it by thinking in a completely different way since we had Google. Like, you don't ever consult books or people. You don't ever have even your opinions much anymore. You're just like, oh, Google, what is that? And Google's like, oh, is this? The end.
Yeah. True. And like, things are lost like now that there's like an objective truth or whatever, whatever Google says would be objective truth.
And he said that before Google was such a huge thing like today, it was like around 2000s. So I think he's got like a way to see what's happening with the future.
Oh. Just like his opinion, though.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, like, he's kind of right. I agree with what he's saying.
Okay. And I think Google's very good at selling us stuff. I don't know if it's...
Of course. But that's exactly
the... much more than that, though. But
I think Google's doing much, much, much more. Like, thinking about space. You can just say to the phone, like, how do I get here? Where am I? And it will tell you the history of the place. Before that, I never knew what I was, where, why, what this even meant. I went on holiday and there was a statue. I was like, whatever that was. Now it's like completely spammed with information and you see all the places and find all the places so easily. You never get lost. You meet people so quickly and so easily. You remember how you set a date and you were supposed to meet there and then nobody went there, waited an hour, and then maybe you met?
I guess they did, yeah.
So in that way, you are completely changed through this.
So it's Google Maps, though. So
but that's just an example. And it's not just maps. Okay. It's everything.
These branches of Google are the impressive things. Maybe not just the search engine itself.
Of course, not just a search engine. Google is not just a search engine. Emails, maps, just saving data on Google Drive, sharing files, uploading videos, YouTube's a part of it, all this crap and shopping.
Okay.
It's all changing us directly how we think and live. And I think he's right in that we are kind of a product of the system.
That's interesting.
That's what he meant.
Do you happen to know his thoughts on like net neutrality?
No.
Because cyberspace is a very neutral place.
Hmm. I would think that he would be for it, of course.
Is he like a doomsday or saying like, you know, this is going to be a big problem or it's going to get worse?
I didn't hear him comment on that. There are some different ideas like all the post-apocalyptic stories. And in fact, what he thinks is that the problem or the reality is that everything is built on top of the old technology that is kind of being retrofitted on top of itself.
I see.
And it's difficult to innovate because everything is just getting stuck on top of itself.
It's just version 2 of the same thing.
He was talking about the difference between the US and Europe, that in Europe all the new buildings are kind of on top of the historical buildings and it's kind of like replacing slowly the history of itself and being retrofitted on top of each other. Meanwhile, in the US, people are more free-minded because they built it new and they don't have the historical baggage there so much. But now it's changed and the new like trends are like the European history.
That's like the whole Ship of Theseus thing going on.
Yeah, something like that.
So, and he moved to Canada? What's the story there?
Yeah, so he moved to Canada because he felt very... His mother was the reason. So when he was 6 years old, his father choked to death in a restaurant on a business trip.
That'll give you some. Yeah. Like, life is cheap in Neuromancer. You know, people die easily, things like that. And I think a background like that explains...
So that obviously influenced his mother. She was chronically depressed. That's why he moved to Canada and also to sci-fi because he wanted some kind of escape. He also taught film history and did a bunch of art projects. I like that he made a bunch of floppy disks with poems that were electronically just stored. And when you open them, they self-destructed. It's kind of funny.
Mission Impossible style.
Yeah, there's loads of movies based on his stories and writing. It's called The Father of Cyberpunk. You mentioned that you wanted to talk a bit about that.
So what is cyberpunk?
What do you think?
So there's two different definitions I can kind of understand. One is the one I've seen where it's high tech, low life. So there's these people with, like Molly's a good example, with these technology implanted in them. And like
human augmentation.
Yeah.
Enhancement.
The holographic vaginas and such. But then like, they're also doing like crime and there's drugs and there's guns and it's kind of that. So is that kind of combination of those two ideas? Or is it cyber? It makes me think, well, it's cyberspace. Mm. So it has to be like a alternate reality. It has to be like a matrix.
I think it's more abstract in general. And I would say both. It's more like if you say horror.
Well, those are two very different things.
Yeah, but I think it's like a more overarching theme. It's like if you have psychological horror or gore. So I guess cyberpunk to me is all you
said. Say that again, if you have psychological
horror or like gory horror, that's whether it's VR, cyberspace, or whether it's human augmentation, I think they inevitably go together. Because as soon as you start having the technology advanced as much as being able to replace human body parts and organs and connect the brain to the computer, inevitably you start talking about, okay, we have a different cyber world to connect to.
Then
it's kind of one and the same genre.
There's no cyberspace in Blade Runner.
Well, you could argue that the androids do have that, but it's not depicted because the humans can't access it, I guess. You could argue that.
Well, you could argue that. You could argue that in Dracula, too, but they just didn't talk about that part.
I don't think you can argue that Dracula has a chip in his brain connects to VR.
Count Monte Cristo, you know, like, oh, they just forgot to mention that. Also in this universe, there's people. Okay. So it's both of those things.
I think it's both.
So cyberpunk is a branch of sci-fi, and then there's branches of cyberpunk, of the alternate reality and those things. So those are all inclusive.
Yeah.
Well, that's disappointing. I thought I was going to be wrong. I thought I was going to learn something.
I think it's just more general. I think to me it always meant human connecting to the PC and technology physically. And therefore, inevitably, also mentally, because that comes with it.
Yeah, okay.
That's all.
Well, then, that's probably the right answer, then.
It doesn't even have to be anti-utopia. It doesn't have to be post-apocalyptic or grim.
So, another thing, too, I was thinking, does all sci-fi have to be dystopic? This one's not kind of the least
dystopian.
Yeah. Really? Well, because, I mean, it's like everyone's a criminal.
I think this is a part of it because it's punk. So the punk part.
It means
everybody's kind of messed up, wasted on drugs, and everybody's killing each other. But I don't think it has to be like that, but usually it is. Usually it's just some kind of, you know, gang.
Okay. I don't remember why I had that thought.
In Star Trek, I'm sure there are some VR, like the holodeck is basically cyberspace.
Is Star Trek cyberpunk?
Well, that's what I'm trying to, like, think about. Like, is cyberspace and the holodeck a different thing? Is a question that I think is interesting.
I'm not too familiar with Star Trek.
Do you know what the holodeck is?
No.
It's like a room, and you can simulate anything you want in that room.
Oh, okay.
So once you're in it, you can be anywhere you want. So it's the same idea like the cyberspace, but you don't get checked in. You go in the space, and it goes projected around you, and you can touch things, you can interact with things. And it can be... Because hologram technology, whatever. It's like,
does it have like a weight to it?
Yeah, everything feels real because the computer can simulate, it can create the projections of the holograms like tangibly. So you can.
So what do they use it for?
Everything. Having sex. But
okay, I was thinking more like battle strategies.
Anything you can think of.
Well, then why do they travel? Why do they go through space?
They don't. That's exactly the point. Like, some people, they just
want to live. Does all Star Trek just take place inside the holodeck? I thought it took place in the stars and in space.
There are episodes where they find out that they've been in the holodeck
God, that seems like such a good cop-out.
Exactly.
Oh.
Didn't happen in this book. I was afraid everything was in cyberspace the whole time. It would be revealed. So, not here. That's good.
Also, in the category of how did that happen, how did he escape cyberspace when Neuromancer traps him in?
Yeah, we'll get into that.
He kind of walks off. He's kind of...
The answer is drugs, so we'll get into it. So before we get into the story, quickly I want to mention that He is also responsible for the movie Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh my god, you seen it?
Yeah, of course. I loved that as a child. Have you seen it?
I tried watching it once and gave up 10 minutes in or whatever.
I think this is very, very, very good example of what kind of world he builds. Because it's like a cyberspace cyber ninja, super cool and red, like Keanu Reeves killing like Japan, like cyber ninjas. It's complete nonsense.
But the cyberspace is the worst part of that movie, yes. Where he has the little VR goggles, yes. And he's moving his hands around and stuff. That was like the lamest part of that movie.
Please, listeners, if you're at least a little curious, go on YouTube right now and search Johnny Mnemonic trailer.
Oh, I'm sure you can watch the whole movie. I'm sure they don't copyright that. No, you don't have to. They don't give a fuck.
Just watch the 1 minute trailer and you'll be laughing so hard.
Just look up the long distance phone call scene. Yeah.
That's in the trailer. Well,
they know where the money's at. They know what they needed.
This movie is
It's like a 90s movie.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sure it's like a cheesy, mm-hmm. In a world where
I love it.
Information is power and you can't go a day without Yakuza.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That sounds... I think I've already seen the trailer. Just
exactly.
Sounds terrible.
The movie is so jank, I love it so much.
There's no Neuromancer film adaptations.
No.
Because...
You can't.
What would be... Yeah, it would be...
It would have to be like a TV show... Like, we talked recently about Denis Villeneuve's Dune adaptation.
Okay.
How they didn't really talk about the thought process, but they focused on the spectacle and the, like, artistic side of the world. If they focused on, like, the visuals of the cyberspace and didn't go so hard on the, you know, UI intelligence, whatever's happening.
Yeah.
Super complicated plot. It could be very visually appealing. It could be,
but the AI stuff is the interesting thing.
Yeah, and then of course that could be there, but they would have to simplify it, I guess, somehow.
I was thinking they would have to do almost more of like an animation, like you've seen the new Spider-Man, Spider-Verse, like thing.
Cool.
It's more like abstract animation. I think that would work well.
There is a comic book adaptation of Neuromancer,
And
people say it's very much easier to follow because when the people are switching context and places and characters. And in the book, it's not very clear that the place and characters changed. In the comic book, you can see the place drawn or painted.
So sure, okay.
It's very obvious what's happening.
Or he has a whole conversation with someone, and then at the last sentence, he goes, I realize now this was Wintermute, not Dixie. And I was like, oh, well, I got to go back and read this whole part, because
I've
lost context there.
So many times, I couldn't be sure who is talking. It was so dumb. So, before we go into plot, would you recommend this book? And to whom?
I definitely recommend it. You know, I think we both talk about sometimes books are hard to, like, get into.
Hmm.
And this one's definitely fits that book, fits that category of hard to crack in. But once you crack in, once you're kind of in the world, once you kind of understand, you know, what's going on, you can follow the characters, then it's a really fun read.
Hmm.
Like I said, the setting's super interesting, like, super interesting ideas, even if they're not always presented clearly. I'd recommend it to someone who's like maybe interested in cyberpunk. Like, again, I don't really know much about cyberpunk I didn't even know exactly like what fit the bill or not. So now that I've kind of got this as like a basis, I think I can like have a good cyberpunk future. I think a lot more like anime would be accessible to me now that I kind of find inaccessible. Like Ghost in the Shell and things like that. It's kind of just too weird for me. I think it just make it less weird. So maybe if you're interested in something like that, if you want to get more into anime or things like that, this is a good kind of stepping stone.
Yeah, for me, it's right on the edge of, we always talk about the classic not holding up anymore, and people talk about the classic book, and then you read it, and you're like, bleh. So this one holds up very well, but it's not as enjoyable as it could be if it was a little bit easier to read or consume, or it was more clear about what you're reading. So I'm a little conflicted. So would you read the whole trilogy? The second one is called Count Zero, and the next one is called Mona Lisa Overdrive.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got them. I found both copies at a local bookstore.
Awesome.
So those are on the docket. Yeah, I want to start reading them for sure.
So please let us know in the comments if you want to hear us talk about the sequels. Also put a little poll on Spotify. You can vote on if you want to hear about the sequels. I'm interested. The books are not long.
Yeah. We're going to read it, so you might as well say yes. If we read it and we can't talk about it, it's kind of going
to
be
multi-night. I was leaving it up to them, but okay.
No. Vote yes.
So if you're curious, if we persuaded you to read this, please stop listening and come back later. I'm going to get into spoilers and spoil completely and hopefully get to the bottom of this ending and what it all meant, because I was very confused. So let's get into the plot.
Yeah.
We were just discussing our favorite parts. My favorite quote of this whole book was, "Don't let the little fuckers' generation get you." Which is the point where the main character gives advice to somebody, or maybe he gets advice. I'm not really sure exactly which character, but the point is the younger generation being advanced with the new technology, they just try to be pretentiously better than you because they understand the new things. So you shouldn't let them.
Don't let them okay boomer you.
Exactly. I like that sentiment. And it's very easy to understand new technology if you try and if you don't get put off by it. So for the old man listening.
Paul.
So like we said, main character is Case. Did you like the character?
Yeah, I thought he was like the wild card. He's like a drug addict and he's got a weapon. But then it turns out he's like the normal one and everyone else is crazy. And so that was another thing that was kind of hard about this book is they're all wild cards. They're all kind of dangerous. They're all kind of unstable characters, not people you want to bring on a heist with you.
Did you feel like there was any kind of character arc with him? Did anything change in
No, but I thought that was like the kind of the point.
Okay.
Well, it was the end of metaphor for something. So
okay.
We'll talk about it at the end.
You're right.
What does it mean? But yeah.
So he is a cyberspace thief.
Cowboy.
So he's
console cowboy.
So he like hacks and steals and stuff. And at one point he steals from his own company and they just completely shut him out of cyberspace. So he gets his nervous system altered so he cannot connect into cyberspace anymore. Basically, his body is kind of messed up.
Mm.
And he's on drugs all the time. He's kind of a waste of a being.
I think he was like addicted to going to cyberspace. Yes, so the drugs are like a supplementary thing. Yes. So I think that was supposed to be his thing.
Mm-hmm. He's a wreck.
Yeah. But again, he's like the least of wreck of the other characters. So, he's a mess, but he's such a better mess than the other
characters.
That's
actually a very good point that you feel like he's the worst ever, and then he finds out that it's not like...
Chapter 2, yeah. here comes Riviera. Yeah, once Riviera showed up, you're like, okay, yeah. Case is looking pretty good here. He's our hero.
So first, he comes home one day. He has this girlfriend called Linda Lee, and she... steals from him is revealed. She leaves and he's kind of disgruntled and he meets all these characters. He's trying to find out what happened. Another character that's my favorite that he meets is called Dean, and he's like an informant kind of person to get information from.
Right, yeah.
And I love his descriptions and what he's like doing. Do you remember?
No. Oh, how they describe him?
He's 150 years old. He has his body altered so he's sexless.
Oh, okay. And he's a guy who goes to like Tokyo every year.
And he's very, very, very hard into tailoring, like suits and clothes. And he gets off when he gets a new suit. Like he's like, yes, sexless, but he gets very much aroused when he's got a new suit. All kinds of characters in this book has some kind of strange sexual kink. Another guy later is aroused by betrayal between lovers or something. It was also very clever, I thought.
Okay.
It was very creative. Like, what kind of joy people find in a world where you can have anything in cyberspace. So this guy, he could have anything virtually. So the thing he chose to be focused on is not any physical pleasure, but just tailored suits. I think that could happen in the future.
I don't find it as amusing as you do, but yeah, that's as interesting.
So he buys a gun at this point, I think.
I'm talking about a gun or a baton or some sort of weapon to attack his little girlfriend or just defend himself for future.
They get some information from this Dean guy and he feels like he's being followed and he feels like there's something going down.
That's right. Okay,
he wants to defend himself. And somebody attacks him and then he meets this character called Molly. So who is Molly?
She's, I was picturing the sex robot from Rick and Morty. The one that Morty bangs and then gets sent off to the other planet and Zorpazorp pops out.
That's quite accurate.
So she's a razor girl. So she's got like cat-like fingernails that are razors, but I don't think she ever uses those. I don't think that ever comes up.
Again, my point, why don't you use these things you set up?
It sure seemed like it would come up convenient a few times. And she's got mirror eyes.
Exactly.
And... Why? I guess to like a poker face thing.
Again, you can't why don't you emotions. Use these things? Damn it, William Gibbons.
Gibson.
It's so cool, but it's never used.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, there's so many. Yeah, there's a lot of things. This is the thing that I have the biggest
problem with in this book. Like, she comes to him and she's like sliding out these razor blades under her arms, and she's got these super eyes, and she's like a meat puppet prostitute, and she's a razor girl. All kinds of things. Not important.
Yeah.
Like the puppet part and the razor girl part. Okay, but like all her parts on her body. Like, why don't you use them in your study?
Because she's good at kung fu or whatever. Yeah. Like that, she uses that. But like, you could just find someone else who's good at kung fu. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of disappointing to me. So she gives him an offer. Her boss is called Armitage. And he needs stuff, something. And what he needs, he doesn't say. But he makes an offer to Case.
A lot of this book is, you'll find out what they're after later.
Basically, 70 or 80% of this book, you don't know why it's happening. It's what John is saying.
You either can't understand what's happening or it's intentionally vague.
What Case wants is clear. He wants to jack back into cyberspace. Mm. So that's exactly what Armitage offers. If he does this mission for him, he will allow him to jack in and jack off and jack out and all these things.
Well, and then the mission involves entering cyberspace itself.
So he tells him he will repair his body.
Plus a new pancreas so he can't do drugs anymore.
So that's what he doesn't tell him. So he goes for the surgery and then he wakes up and he waits like 7 days to regen. And then he can finally connect to cyberspace. He weeps with joy and he's so overwhelmed that he can finally be his own self in the cyberspace. Yeah.
You're skipping over the least sexy sex scene I've ever read.
Yes. What was that?
Kind of a nerdy guy, I guess, you know, just describing... Banging Molly. Because the thing too is, why does Molly find him attractive? What's like the relationship there?
Mm.
Was she like supposed to seduce him? Was that part of it or something? But
in my notes, I wrote they were bored, so they had lots of sex.
Well, and okay, again, I mean that's a better reason.
And I think the motivation should have been that he's really, really suffering withdrawal from drugs and cyberspace at the point he was waiting to connect again because he couldn't do drugs at the time.
Right, okay.
So the only escape he could find was sex.
Well, I see why he wants, you know, he's a guy, a guy's always in trouble. I'm just saying, why does she want to enter in a relationship with him?
What Case wants, very clear. What the other characters wants, partially clear. What Molly wants, I have no idea what she wants.
Because at first it seems like she's like a prostitute of Armitage. Mm-hmm. Like she has to work. She's kind of in some sort of bad relationship with him.
Probably.
But then we find out that's not true and she could have...
I like to believe that because Wintermute is behind everything, he told her to have sex with him to get him into the mission.
Again, but you want to believe that it's never said like that. It takes a lot.
Yeah.
They ask a lot of you to kind of make your own story, make it better.
Exactly. And I'd like to ask you listeners, please write us in the comments. Is there a good sex scene in any sci-fi book? Actually, there is kind of fun sex scenes in Dune, but not so detailed. So if you have a good sci-fi with sex in it, please tell us which one. I want to know, because there has never been a good sci-fi sex scene in anything. The only sex scene that I liked in any of the books we covered on this podcast so far was in Jade City. It was a fantasy thing we did recently.
Not the sex with COVID? That wasn't hot?
It was one of the worst things ever in my life.
Anthony Kiedis' scar tissue. You want to read like erotica. That guy talking about banging on heroin.
Okay.
That's a great sex book.
Okay. We might try that one.
Yeah. We'll read that one next. Put that in your poll. You want to hear us talk about Anthony Kiedis' dick for 2 hours?
Okay, I'll put it like, do you want your mensa too or this?
It's going to be overwhelming.
It's going to be the poll. All right, I'll definitely do that. So, Case tries to get some information out of Armitage. What am I doing? Why am I doing this? He finds out that he's got some ties to Yakuza and he's kind of a weird guy. And then he finds that Armitage tricked him, like John already mentioned. He replaced his body, so in the future they can manufacture organs, I guess, or
they can do anything. Like 3D printed. That's not that outrageous.
And I like this plot point that he modified Case's body so he couldn't get high. Which is the best employer's move you can do.
Yeah, okay.
So he said, you can get high after you've done the job. And not over did I put a different pancreas so you can't get high. I also installed poison sex in your body. And they will release the poison and kill you if you don't do this job in 7 days.
They escaped from New York there. They put in that ultimatum.
So at this point, I was very much into this book. Very interesting setup. I liked it this far.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So next, they have the first part of this mission.
Very unclear. I didn't know there's like three parts. I didn't realize there's going to be three parts, but yeah, three different heists.
So they need to steal like this person,
his RAM, right?
His RAM.
And again, like, is that a that feels another just throwing a computer word?
Well, RAM means random access memory. It's the operational memory in the computer. It kind of makes sense. I think it doesn't. It's just memory.
Isn't that the famous thing from like that Hackers? And they go, like, "Oh, I'm downloading more RAM," and that's like
that's bullshit.
That's like the famous line. So I felt that was a little bit of that.
They have this heist, and they have to rescue somebody called McCoy Polly,
aka
Dixie,
aka
Flatline,
aka somebody. I think just those three. But yeah, very confusing later.
Not to
when you find out this one character has three different names and they reference at different points.
So his name is Flatline because he flatlined.
He died.
Yes,
but not because he's dead. Mm. He's only this computer personality now. But he flatlined before he died.
Isn't it the same thing?
Well, so he flatlined and like that got him famous and then he got came back to life.
Okay, okay.
And then, so like that was like, his nickname while he was live was Flatline.
Yeah, so he died a bunch but came back to life.
Yeah.
Because he didn't die for so long.
But then
long.
One time he stopped dying. He stopped coming back to life. he finally got good at dying and he finally died. So, and now he only exists as this online personality.
Exactly. Yeah, so to explain what that means, the hackers like Case, if they get into some shit to sum up, they can just have a seizure from the overload of senses from the cyberspace. And it happens to the main character a bunch. Like he tries to hack something, a virus gets haywire. Yeah, it happens three times.
Okay.
Three times he dies.
I remember, okay. Okay, that's a bunch. Once it would be a bunch, I guess, but yeah.
Long story short, things go down. They rescue this character who is like a personality uploaded in the Matrix.
Mm.
So it's a being. And
why do they rescue him? You'll find out
in
10
chapters.
They
need him for the mission.
They'll explain that eventually. And they don't really need him.
Because
Case is like the computer guy. But he's a better computer guy.
But there are some points they need.
Is there things that Case can do that Dixie can't?
No.
So why didn't they just... Why do they...
I think it's just Wintermute being, you know, resourceful and having the backup. There's no answer.
You can make your own meaning. I think there's a lot of things supposed to do with that.
So thanks to Dixie, Case finds that Armitage is actually also Corto. That he was a military general or something, a soldier. And he was on trial because he was overly aggressive and he killed people or something happened bad.
Something like that, yeah.
Something, he did bad things. Mm. And then he got into a fight where most of his body got blown off.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just left with the torso and half of his face. And then they reconstructed him and rebuilt his body.
Darth Vader style.
But he wasn't fully there. And he got a little mad. And Wintermute, we keep saying, is this AI behind all this? He brainwashed him or manipulated him? What did he do? Like, talk to him?
Just changed his mind, just altered his personality, created a new one.
So he created Armitage as a new personality built on this Corto guy. And that's how he kind of stabilized him, because this person was mad at that point.
So again, everyone's a wild card, so Corto's super crazy, and Armitage is just a little bit crazy, so...
So Case is very suspicious, Molly also is kind of suspicious. I think at this point we learn about jacking into people. It's just a cool concept.
Because this the Finn shows up.
I think so.
And he sets up like a thing on Case's computer or whatever that he can then like see through the eyes of Molly.
Yes.
But then also he can like feel things.
He's like
conveniently and inconveniently.
No, it's like as if he was her, but he can't control her. He can just sense what she's sensing.
Okay, but so then sometimes though he's like, he noticed she was, like, you know, missing a leg or something. Mm-hmm. You think you would have noticed that when you first jacked in.
Yep.
Or so I'm saying sometimes when it's convenient for the plot, he feels her. And then when it's...
I think it's more that they don't talk about it very much.
But okay.
I would imagine that, of course, he knows that she's missing a leg.
And here's the thing. I think he tries to set this up that he can also kind of feel her emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of creating like an empathy, and that kind of like connect like the love, like why
this part I loved in the book.
I thought that was like the best, like
it was very good.
It's gonna write like a good story. I thought that was a very interesting thing to do, like why they came together.
Also, do you remember the first thing Molly does when she feels that he is inside her? Like,
is it something sexual? No, I don't remember.
It's really sexual, yes. She's like, oh, first time Case is watching me. Let me play with my nipples. Oh, you like that, right? You never read?
No, I don't remember that part, but yeah.
And we learn all this backstory, which I really enjoyed. I think Molly and Dixie are my favorite characters.
Molly's probably my favorite character. Yeah. Or the Jamaican guys.
Yeah, it's funny.
He's like funny, weird. Again, wild card, crazy guy.
But I like the history. There's some good character building behind Molly because he mentioned she's a meat puppet. And what she means by that is that she could switch off the limits and she could have somebody be her. So when you jack into her, for lack of better words, you are sensing what she's sensing. So some people pay her for, you know, being her while she's doing things to enjoy them. And then there are other people who pay her to be her and control her body while she is not conscious. And she didn't know what happens.
Until she like blacks out and these things.
And then she slowly finds out that obviously not good things happen. And she has nightmares about it. And then she tries to repress the memories and she tries to erase the memories, but it's so intense she can't deal with it.
Mm. They try to set up this thing about also we're talking about the real world and cyberspace is connected, but then also dream world is also connected here. Like Wintermute messes with Case's dream at one point.
I think this was trying to say that the brain is kind of the same like the computer memory. And when things get in it, it's difficult to get them out, and even though you don't have it in your consciousness, when your subconscious dreams or whatever, it's still there, so the information can be put in your brain also.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Yeah, no, that was very good. Yeah.
So part two of the mission, they go to Istanbul, and they need to get this guy called Riviera.
Riviera.
So who's Riviera?
Is he the guy you're talking about who gets off on people's betrayal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought it was more of a... what's it called when you get off on like hurting people?
Also, he gets off on all kinds of things.
So he's just like a piece of shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's a drug addict.
Exactly.
He's a masochist.
Yes.
He's a thief, I guess, and other things. And he can also make holograms. He's a little bit of a wizard.
So he's an artist who makes people see his performance by means we don't understand.
And it's all very kind of vague.
The whole time I was reading what the performance was, I was sure it was in real life. And then I was like, oh, it was in cyberspace. And I was like, oh, what? What?
Well, then how are they seeing it if they're not jacked in? Yeah.
Exactly. So they are jacked in, but they are not jacked in. And they're watching it in real life, but they are watching it in cyberspace.
Well, which really does make sense later when he tricks. Yeah. So
I think what the writer is trying to say, it's like augmented reality.
I got it.
So they're watching the cyberspace things, but in real life on top of each other.
Right. So I think it's, I don't know, it's holograms. Yeah. So it's in a real world space.
Yes.
But then there's, you know, like fake.
But the actions have real consequences. They never describe this in much detail. So you're like wondering there, like, do you have this red description of what happened? And you're like, what did it mean? Like, are these things tangible?
Right.
Whatever. So he has this performance where he cuts people up, basically. And he cuts Molly up. He cuts her limbs off. It's horrible. And I was thinking, like, did that happen? Did it not happen? So I guess it didn't happen, but it did happen in her mind. So that's why she's scarred by it, right?
That's a better explanation than what I got. Yeah, okay. That sounds good to me. Okay. He's just a piece of shit. He's just a terrible guy.
Why do they need him? I have no idea.
Because his holograms, he can make distractions.
Okay.
And then also, I think it is kind of, he's a bit of a wild card.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay. I feel like Wintermute and Molly could have just done this by themselves.
Yeah.
Everyone else was just kind of extra.
Yeah.
Because he needs someone to interact with the real world. Like, there's like physical locks that he can't touch.
True.
So, like, you just need someone to do that, which I think Molly was pretty much doing that.
I'm trying to think of what Case can do and the others can't, but I don't have an answer. There might be something.
Yeah, he's a computer guy, but in a world where the computer world and the real world are so interconnected, I feel like everyone's a computer guy. I don't know why he's so special.
So, I'm going to skip a little bit, but I am very confused about this Riviera guy character. So, because he starts working with them, and then Molly is very upset that he cut her up in a performance, so she spikes his food or drinks and she poisons him, but he doesn't die from that. And there are other characters, and then he just leaves them behind and joins the other team and is against them. It's like, what is happening?
I feel like he was only supposed to be part of the Istanbul job. He wasn't going to follow them to the...
Okay, but then again, what was the Istanbul job for?
Wasn't the Istanbul job when they get the Chinese virus?
They get the virus, yes.
So that was...
Did they need him to get the virus? Because to get the virus, all they happened was that Case jacked into stuff and hacked stuff, and then they got the virus through cyberspace. So I felt like they didn't need Riviera to get the virus.
They need Riviera to impress one of the Janes.
Maybe.
Because then he does the different show.
Okay.
Where he...
That's why. Okay, right.
Where
okay.
he doesn't cut up Molly, but he does worse things okay, to her. Okay, and then that is gonna supposed to impress her.
Maybe that's why.
And because they're trying to, like, befriend her to mm-hmm. get into the heart of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But that was in Istanbul, so you're right. So why did they have to bring him in?
I was super confused.
I think all they did in Istanbul was to get the virus.
At this part, the book, like, lost me.
This
like,
is the, when you talk about, was, did you find it boring? Yeah, this was the boring part.
I was like, what?
The middle section here.
It wasn't even boring. It was just like, what is happening? So we get to the final part.
So they're in space. I liked that part.
So they go to space, to a space station.
It's like a Vegas in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a half casino, half resort.
But then, again, it happens what I hate. Like, they set up how difficult it is to acclimate to zero gravity and what it means to be on the space station. And Case has all kinds of problems with that. And then he deals with
and
it. Never mentioned
fine,
it again.
Yeah.
And never then, mentioned again.
Yeah.
Just, damn it, why do you set it up? And
he
then
gets
never
carsick for like 10 minutes
exactly.
and then figures it out.
It's like bad writing. Like, you've set up a thing that could be very useful and very putting depth to the story, and then you disregard it immediately.
I think it's just world building. He's just trying to build a world, trying to, you know, little thought. Like, oh, well, wouldn't it be weird if this was happening? It's just like little details. Like, you're talking about how the planet's so self-sufficient because yeah, they grow their own food and they get their own water.
All kinds of details.
And it's like those things. And it's like, oh, that's interesting, like, thought.
Yeah.
And then it's also the thing about, like, why we're so confused because there's so much
yeah,
things
exactly.
that are irrelevant.
Exactly.
So then all of a sudden something is relevant and it
exactly.
gets lost in the noise.
That's exactly the problem.
So, yeah, there's a lot of things that don't quite connect.
Same with the Hyperion series.
Okay.
But much worse with Hyperion. Much worse. So much worse. The Hyperion books.
What episode was that?
48. Those books almost killed me. Oh my fucking god. There's another thing that's like relevant and not relevant. This Jamaican weed spaceship guy.
He's constantly listening to... They call it dub. What kind of music were you picturing?
Yeah, like the stereotype. Like, have you been to Amsterdam?
No.
I've been to like all those, you know, coffee shops or quotation marks.
Okay, they got like weed and stuff in them.
Yeah, and they always play the most stereotypical, like, you know, you have these like designs where everybody has the Rastafarian heads. And
yeah,
that's
the guy I was picturing.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's walking around with a shot off shotgun. For all the high tech, they're still good. The good shot off shotgun is still a weapon that they use in the future.
I said on the Hyperion review that I lost respect for the writer at that point. This was on the edge of me losing any. I was like, why is this here?
But when he's.
He's okay.
Go, yeah, man. Yeah. What's love, brother? And how he's trying to. You're trying to read what he's like.
Exactly.
Trying to talk like that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was okay. I didn't. Mind it, but it wouldn't.
I'd probably not PC. Probably wouldn't fly now because yeah. This guy's also crazy. He's getting high all the time on weed.
What does this guy want, and why does he help in case? I guess they're friends. They have some history.
No,
alone.
And they get a cut. They're getting money.
Oh, okay, they're getting money. Okay,
yeah. Yes. So there's the casino planet,
mm-hmm.
and at the tip, maybe the top, maybe the bottom, maybe mm-hmm. the north. Again, geography is very confusing.
Yeah.
Is the compound
mm-hmm.
of the. Hatfield family?
Yeah.
And they are in control of the AI.
Hmm.
And so they need to break into there to unleash Winterfell.
Yeah. So they get to this final part of the mission. And Case is on this super Jamaican Rastafarian ship. Molly is somewhere.
She's on the compound. She's breaking into the compound.
But the compound is where? On station?
It's in the space
station. Okay.
And it's part of the space station.
It's part of the
space
station.
It's like a tip. It's at the end of the station.
And we never talked about this Wintermute thing. So Wintermute is an AI inside of the cyberspace matrix. It was created by itself?
The mother of the family made it.
Oh. Of which family?
Of the Hartfeld family. The whatever, the rich family.
Okay. So there's another AI called Neuromancer.
And they're brothers.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, if I understand correctly, that Wintermute got all these people together for the purpose of hacking into Neuromancer, who's trying to defend himself and be free, because Wintermute doesn't have all the abilities that the other AI has, and they want to merge together. Wintermute want to merge with Neuromancer.
They don't want, yeah. Neuromancer does not want
to
merge. They make that very clear. He
clear.
Wants to be himself. And Wintermute, it's all about personality.
Yes.
Wintermute doesn't have a personality. That's why he like talks the case through other characters.
Yes.
And why does he need a personality?
I like that part because the whole reason Neuromancer is different is that he can make copies of people in his memory.
Mm-hmm.
So when Case first finds him, The Neuromancer knows what's like planned. He knows that Wintermute's out to get him, so he wants to stop Case from, you know, working with him. So he wants to trap him in the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So he creates a copy of his ex-girlfriend who died, and he wants to have him like live in this paradise and stay in the Matrix forever. Only by the power of drugs and Rastafarian weed, he's saved, because he flatlines, and he flatlines because the guy on the ship who is next to him while he's jacked into this Matrix and kind of being trapped somehow notices it, and then he overdoses him on some drugs, and that's how he dies and gets out of it.
Okay, is that how it happened?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but I think so.
Because he's on like an infinite beach, and yes. I just read it as he just kind of walks off. he just kind of finds the edge of the infinite beach and kind of just enters it.
I think he dies.
Okay.
To reset.
He does die a lot. He does flatline a few times, yeah.
So that's what happens.
Okay.
And the Neuromancer, I think it's a very clever idea, is, you know, the Necromancer, but neurologically and in the cyberspace, so he can kind of resurrect people. I think that's a good concept for the story, because Wintermute doesn't have any personality. The concept is lost on him, and it's just an AI that's very mechanical, and he needs other people to even talk to Case. And his desire is to become more powerful and be able to construct his own personality and become a personality himself. And that's the ability that the Neuromancer has. He can make new personalities, and he made his own personality. He's like a child in the story.
Yeah, yeah.
So that makes complete sense. And Wintermute desires this, and he wants to become a better AI. So that's why he wants to like hack himself into Neuromancer and become one thing together.
Okay.
But Neuromancer is fine. He doesn't want that. So the final heist is, yes.
Is to, they have to get into the heart of the computer.
Yes.
Which is both, again, it's a physical space and it's in the cyberspace. Yes. So it's kind of confusing what's going on.
So Molly is trying to get there physically while Case is trying to hack in the cyberspace.
Right.
And they use this Chinese virus thing to hack through Neuromancer's defenses.
Right. But then the Chinese virus becomes a physical entity at one point, and it starts physically attacking.
Yes. There's a bunch of ninjas.
Yeah. And that's when Riviera portrays them, and he creates a hologram of of kids playing in a pool.
I had that part I was
wondering. And she like throws a grenade at the kids in the pool, and then all of a sudden it turns out it was a secret, and Three Jane's ninja sneaks up on her while she's throwing grenades.
Exactly. And this part I was so confused. Like, it was kind of cool, the fights. But what is Three Jane?
So she is a copy, a clone of the older man's, the patriarch's daughter.
Okay.
And this family, the Hartfield family, whatever, they're in pretty much a state of suspended animation.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets awoken when they find out that Molly's like breaking into the house.
Yes.
And he had awoken another clone of his daughter. And essentially having sex with her.
And this clone is physical or cyberspace unreal?
I think it's all real.
Okay.
Because he's actually there. And then Molly sees like this person, this girl being treated unfairly. Okay. Reminds her of her past as being a sex puppet. So she kills him.
Because at this point, I was so confused. Because I was thinking back to Riviera and his performance. And how you said it was in real life, but it wasn't real. And it was tangible, it wasn't tangible. So I was sure that all these people were not real. And they were projections of some shit. And
oh, you're like waiting for that to come up?
I was like, what?
Yeah. No, just the kids in the pool were holograms.
Fucking kids in the pool.
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
I don't know what's wrong with that. But then also, then he was trying to kill himself too, so it was like a suicide because he didn't.
Yeah, at one point she meets somebody that, what was that about?
So he's like the patriarch of the family, and he had killed his wife who was trying to like unleash these AIs because he wanted to like control the AIs.
Okay.
And this has all happened sometime way in the past. And then they go into suspended animation, but then he gets woken up, and then his daughter is also awake. And so his daughter sees on the cameras Molly killing him. So that's why she like attacks Molly. Or has her ninja attack
Molly. This part was lost
to me. He was killing himself. He was like in the process of suicide. He'd taken drugs or something.
Yes, yes.
So like it wasn't really like a murder. And he was killing himself because the suspended animation was like cold.
Oh.
And he didn't.
Oh,
he didn't like being chilly.
So thank you so much for explaining. This part I completely misunderstood.
That might be wrong, and that might be fill in your own story, make your own story. Because again, there's plenty of things in this book that's kind of make
all
your
these
own.
Characters you just talked about, I was like, why?
They're like a super rich family, and then they live on this casino planet. I got that part of it.
So that's the same family that created Wintermute?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the mom created Wintermute.
Okay.
and then she was murdered by the dad. So then Molly gets attacked by the ninja, mm-hmm. who cuts off her leg?
Yeah, something like that.
And then she kind of just befriends 3 Jane, the mm-hmm. daughter, and then they both kind of agree that Riviera is annoying. And so then,
very much.
And yes. So then she switches teams. She betrays Riviera and mm-hmm. helps them kill, or helps them get through to Winter.
So did the family somehow pay Riviera off, or why did he join them? What's happening there? Do we know? I guess we don't know.
That's a good point. Like, what's his motivation? Yeah,
yeah. I don't know what Riviera
drugs comes up at one point.
Yeah.
And then, like, they both poison him at some point. Mm. And then he uses holograms to blind the ninja.
There's so much, shit happens.
Then that doesn't really pay off, and they just they go fight off screen. They go fight in a corner, and that doesn't really come up again.
Too much William Gibson. Too much.
Yeah. And then the Chinese computer becomes a shark / helicopter, and it physically attacks the barrier that's connecting or disconnecting Wintermute and Neuromancer.
I couldn't deal with this.
And it frees Neuromancer, and he becomes like a god.
I couldn't deal with this ending. Like, I had to read this again and again. I was like, what is happening?
Well, and then the whole time, I think they're in the space station, but they did something, and it's crashing. It's like falling
towards Earth. You mentioned, I completely missed that it's falling.
Something's falling. I don't know. Okay. The descriptions were very confusing as the geography of all this. Very confused about that.
I was so confused. Okay. So all kinds of stuff goes down. And then Wintermute finally breaks in and merges with Neuromancer.
Mm.
And they become a super intelligence, super AI.
Which they already are, but yeah, super AI with a personality, I guess.
And now nothing changed? I was so confused because
pays off the government.
Yeah, so first the super intelligence was behind all this. So now Case gets what he wants. So he gets his poison sex removed from his body mm-hmm. and he's all fine. He gets some money. Molly gets some money. Everybody's happy. So the AI is just like now in the void and it's fine. I was worried what's going to happen next. Like, what is this AI going to do? Sit there and do nothing?
Sets up for the sequel.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess sequel time, but it was such a strange ending. And then, so first off, Molly leaves.
Yeah, after that holy thought.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Bam, bam, thank you, ma'am. Yeah, she's on to the next
hopefully
one.
Hopefully that's something that comes up in the sequel. I'm genuinely curious what happens to Molly.
Because there's a thing about she was supposed to be like kind of falling in love with him, but she's revealing her past and she's never done.
They were really like having the relationship.
Connection. Yeah, connection. Yeah. Which again, we both said that was like one of our favorite parts is how him being inside her, seeing through her eyes, kind of getting
that connection.
And also
him, I was like, he's just have a new girlfriend now, just doing whatever. And I was like, couldn't you just mention then they miss each other?
What? Did he have a new girlfriend? I thought it was like...
Yeah, but he had like a new girlfriend.
I thought it all ended with like, she like wrote like a note.
Yeah, she wrote a note, like a goodbye note. And it was like a time skip and he went on with his life. He started hacking again, having his cowboy life in cyberspace. And he had a new woman with him.
Oh, okay, I missed the time skip. I thought this all happened in the hotel room.
I think there was sometime later they're like just living their life.
Because then Wintermute's going to show up one more time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and then Case is in cyberspace and he sees some characters.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that part.
It's like Star Wars again where he sees the Force ghosts waving at him.
He sees Force ghosts.
Yeah.
And he sees himself.
Himself.
And Molly? Jane.
The little boy?
The little boy who is Neuromancer.
Okay.
He sees the ex-girlfriend of his.
Jane, who Neuromancer is trying to use.
So Neuromancer copied him, copied Case, and copied Jane, and made them live together in cyberspace, which I think is very amusing, because it's almost like he copied them to be his parents, because he's the child with them.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
And he's just living a life now with them. He created...
Well, okay.
I probably not what that means, but it's just kind of like the symbolism. It's kind of funny that... The Neuromancer can now just make his own beings and do whatever he wants. So he just made a copy of J. Case because it was easier to make a copy and do whatever he wants with him rather than to talk to Case. Interesting. And this whole like psychological debacle about yourself being copied in a computer. What does it mean if you are yourself once again in cyberspace and it's not you but it is you and all this kind of conflict? So I would be up for that in the sequels if that comes up.
I'm just going to call it right now. That's not going to come up in the sequels. I just...
hope that comes up.
All the unanswered questions.
I hope this conflict comes up. This is like a very interesting thing. Like, you know, if you delete a copy of a being, does it die? I would highly recommend a video game called Soma. It's like a horror video game about this, and it's very well made, and it's very clever about what it depicts. But in this book, I don't know if it's going to be that.
I'd say more of like, in the future, there's going to be a bad case, like the virtual case is with the bad guy.
So then there is also some laughter, and it sounds like Dixie. So Dixie was like a disgruntled friend of Case, and he wished to be deleted after the heist was done. And right. they delete him, but now he's there again. So I like the implication that once the memory is in the void, like nowadays on the internet, then you can't get rid of it because somebody always has a copy.
Okay.
So even though Dixie wanted to be relieved and let go and just have his death, Neuromancer just snatched him up and he can use him whenever he wants.
Yeah, I think that is Neuromancer, like kidnapped him and exactly. trapped him in the void.
So that idea, I like this concept very much. So I'm very interested in the sequel based on these things.
Okay.
I'm praying they come up.
Because I thought it was Neuromancer is talking about that because he's like a god now, or he is the Matrix and everything.
Yes.
And he said, I found another one.
That's my point I want to end with.
Okay.
Aliens.
No, you think it's aliens? An alien created an AI? I think there's another AI or whatever.
It's aliens.
Okay. Well, I don't know then. Yeah, a lot of sequel bait. A lot of unanswered questions throughout the whole book. And then it ends with just tune in next week.
Neuromancer mentions that he caught a transmission from Alpha Centauri star system. And it's another kind of AI system. And I like something well, being.
I guess
so
that would be aliens. Yeah, okay.
It's aliens.
Well, and then you're talking about, does Case have an arc? Does he have it?
Yeah.
Whatever. And I was saying no, but that's kind of an intentional thing. You know, he wanted to be able to go back into cyberspace. Okay. He can go back into cyberspace. Yeah. But how I kind of remembered it ending was he gets the ninja star that Molly left him.
Okay.
I think she used it to pin the note or whatever. And then Wintermute comes on like the television to like kind of taunt him. And he like throws it at that and it like messes up the TV. So I took that as like, maybe he's like done with technology. You know, 2 minutes later, he's in cyberspace.
He's just an addict. He meant to do that, and then he was just too weak to resist.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think there's character growth. I don't think anyone really learned anything.
I think Molly is potentially, you know, has a lot of growth, but it's not talked about.
But then they just kind of throw it all away then at the end. Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. I want to love this book because so much of it is so interesting, but it's buried under things unrelated being discarded, characters being not relevant, things being confusing and described in a way that makes you question your own reality. So I love it and I hate it.
I like how you read it and you choose your own adventure. Yeah. You choose to make these things better, make more sense in your head.
So it's another one of those books. If you think about it, it gets very interesting, but the book is not necessarily amazing in the sense of telling you everything in a way that's very easily understandable.
For sure.
If you're the person who likes to ponder and find your meaning in it, you will probably love it. But if you want to have a good time with a book as an adventure, you would probably hate it.
Probably not going to like it, yeah. It's a good gateway drug to more cyberpunk.
So we might rejoin for the future in the sequel. If you have for it, I would be interested.
Vote yes.
Okay. So thank you so much. It was lots of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you putting the time into it. It's always a time investment into a book. So thank you for spending all the time. I hope for the listeners we either saved you time and hopefully explained some things if you read it.
Hope our explanation wasn't more confusing than the confusing book.
We did our best.
Thank you very much for listening. We definitely scored a lot of points, both me and John. I deserve all the embarrassment points for constantly mispronouncing William Gibbons Gibson. I won't even pronounce it ever again correctly. And also for John, I can't deal that he kept saying Winterfell instead of Wintermute. So rate us on Apple Podcasts for our incompetence, as well as on Spotify. And coming up on the next episode, Adam and Paul joined me to discuss one of my all-time favorite sci-fi classics, The Day of the Triffids, by John Wyndham, or as some people might think, it's pronounced John Wyndham.